It's Wednesday. It's 1 o'clock. It's time for the Indie Media Radio London show, brought to you on Resonance FM 104.4, bringing protest stories direct from the streets, posted onto the indiemedia.org.uk newswire and to global indie media sites worldwide. We look forward to presenting your stories, so keep posting them to indiemedia.org.uk. Hello, yesterday was Valentine's Day, and of course it's big bucks for the greeting card companies and the supermarkets. Now, we're not killjoys here, honestly, but sometimes it all just makes you a little sick. And we've got lots of stories as to why Valentine's Day is so sickly. But Sam has a story about what Valentine's Day's really about. Well, it's not a story, is it? It's a song, isn't it?
It is. This is a broken token ballad from the Waterloo battle, and Broken Token ballads usually involve lovers being separated for several years through wars or travels, and they'd snap a ring in half, and each would take a piece, and often through the ravages of time, they would forget what each other looked like, or they'd change, so when they were to meet again, they wouldn't recognise each other. And this is a song about that very moment, and it's called The Plains of Waterloo. As I roved out one fine summer's morning, down by the gay banks of a clear purling stream, I spied a fair young maiden in such sad lamentations. I threw myself in ambush to hear her sad refrain. Through the grove she marched along, caused the valleys to ring, and the small feathered songsters all around her they flew, crying the wars they are all over, and peace it is restored again. But my Willie's not returning from the plains of Waterloo. I stepped up to this fair one and says, my fond preacher, may I make so bold as to ask your lover's name? For I have been in battle where the cannons loud do rattle, and by your description I might have known the same. Willie Smith's my true love's name, he's a hero of great fame. He's gone and left me in sorrow, it's true. No one shall me enjoy but my own darling boy. And yet he's not returning from the plains of Waterloo. If Willie Smith's your true love's name, he's a hero of great fame. Him and I have been in battle through many's the long campaign. Through Italy and Russia, and Germany to Prussia, he was my loyal comrade through France and through Spain. Until at length by the French we were surrounded, as heroes of old we did them subdue. We fought for 3 days, until at length we did defeat him, that brave Napoleon Bonny on the plains of Waterloo. On the 18th day of June it happened at the battle, caused many a bold hero to sigh and to mourn. When the war drums did beat and the cannons loud did rattle, 'twas by a French soldier your Willie he was slain. And as I passed by, oh, the place where he lay bleeding, I scarcely had time to bid him adieu. With a faltering voice, these words he was repeating. Farewell, my lovely Annie, you are far from Waterloo. Oh, when this lovely maiden heard this sad acclamation, her two red rosy cheeks, they grew pale into one. When I saw this handsome lady in such sad lamentation, I said, my lovely Annie, I am the very one. Well, and here is the ring which between us was broken, in the midst of all dangers, to remind me of you. And when she saw the token, she flew into my arms, saying, you're welcome, dearest Willie, from the plains of Waterloo.
Hooray! So, anyway, in the spirit of Valentine's Day becoming a horrible commercial festival, hundreds of people took part in the now annual OIL, Reclaim Love Gathering, at the Eros statue in London. OIL, or Operation Infinite Love, saw around 600 people dancing together and affirming life and love, rather than love for sale. We're now going to play some audio excerpt from the videos that were uploaded to Indie Media of the event, of everyone dancing in public, covering the fun and games. And for more information on Operation Infinite Love, check out www.o-i-l.net.
What's inside? I want an immediate look. I want.
Comforting anti-wrinkle cream with pro-retinol A, giving women firmer feeling, younger looking skin.
Well, hello everybody, welcome to the Piccadilly Circus late early show.
Lasting Velvet Petal Grand Prix. This is not just Valentine's Day.
Hello, welcome to Reclaim Log 3! We're meeting every year now to reclaim love from the corporate industries who say you have to buy something to prove to someone that you love them.
What we are here to do is to tell everybody that it's not against the law to have fun.
And there's such an encouragement around this time of year to go and shop, to prove to someone that you love them, you buy them something. Well, actually, if you just love them, it's even better. Because, you know, of course I love you, I bought you flowers, didn't I? You know, it's like, that's really fine.
I'm from the land of love. Reclaiming love, because there's lots of fear and confusion. People don't know that they can allow to love each other, so we just thought we'd remind everybody that they can love each other and hug each other and have sex with each other as much as they like.
I think just being here makes a difference, yes. Yes, from little things like this, major things grow. Let's get together to fight
this holy Armageddon. Hello everyone in it. This is D-Man in it. K-Town, SE11 in it. This thing is quite good, like, but I'm here with all my man in it still in it. K-Town, SE11 all day, every day, lockdown out.
Kind of good out here, see lots of people gathered around to see everything. Clamps out here, isn't it?
Today has been absolutely amazing. We must have had nearly 1,000 people in that circle. Last year we had about 300, and it was just extraordinary. People, and this whole area was clear, and everyone just loves love. It's obvious.
Aussie, babies, all up rats, kids on all day, all time juicy.
For the third year in a row,
We're going to make a beautiful big circle and send love and healing out to all the beings in all the world. And the reason it is, the reason we can call this Reclaim Love is because at Valentine's, what happens is people have a tendency to think that they have to go out shopping to prove that they love somebody. And that is absolute rubbish. You do not have to go shopping and buy something to prove that you love someone. All you have to do is love them. It's absolutely as simple as that, isn't it? And also, people say that oil and gas are the most important resources in this planet today. That is also rubbish. Love is the most important resource on this planet. Yes!
And now we have a few more Valentine's-related hijinks. On Sunday, campaigners from Trident Ploughshares held a mock wedding at Devonport Dockyard in Plymouth. Dressed in red and pink and various Gothic-style get-up, they enacted the marriage of the people and city of Plymouth to Britain's own weapons of mass destruction. That is the legendary Trident missile system. A marriage made seemingly without the consent of any resident in the city. One Trident Ploughshares activist stated, "We come here in the spirit of love, with the news that Plymouth's Trident submarines break our hearts." A huge red and black banner with a dark Valentine's comment in large letters declared, "Trident plus Plymouth, a marriage made in hell," and it was hung across the gate to the dockyard. Another Trident Ploughshares activist said, "At a time when many of Plymouth's essential services are strapped for cash, we could better use the resources wasted on the Trident system." And ploughshares get their name from the biblical idea that you should beat your swords into ploughshares. And for more about them, you can look up www.tridentploughshares.org. Meanwhile, on Valentine's Day itself, yesterday, environmentalists protested outside the Icelandic embassy. They were demonstrating against the Kárnjúka Icelandic dam and the international aluminium invasion of the last great pristine wilderness of Europe by the multinational company Alcoa. They held a huge banner depicting cartoon reindeer being led to execution by an Alcoa militia and mock tombstones mourning the demise of wildlife and the environment. One of the protesters, Alan Parker, said, "I think it's disgusting that multinational corporations are allowed and indeed invited to bargain over a priceless landscape. We came to highlight the fact that the Icelandic government is just as much to blame for these atrocities as the companies involved in the destruction of this irreplaceable ecosystem." Afterwards, the protesters moved their demonstration to the Pure Iceland exhibition, currently held at the Science Museum in London. This exhibition is presented by the Icelandic national power company, Landsvirkjun, who are producing the power for the aluminium multinationals and guaranteeing financial backup in the inevitable event of exceeding both budget and time limitations. Last Thursday, campaigners also picketed the office of Impregilo New Cross Limited, part of the company which is building the controversial dam. Wandering into the first open plan office, they proceeded to speak to all the employees, including the senior management, and one person met with the finance director of the company, who promised to pass the campaigners' message onto their head office in Italy. And outside, campaigners held banners and handed out leaflets all afternoon to the passing public. Police attended the protest, but took no action against the campaigners. We're covering this campaign before, but for more background on the campaign against the dam, see www.killingiceland.org. And even more from yesterday, it was a busy day, lots of love about. There was a Valentine's Day protest outside the bi-monthly meeting of the Health and Safety Commission, which is the government-appointed committee that sets the policy for the Health and Safety Executive. The protest was organised by the Hazards Campaign, and it was to draw attention to the abolition of basic safeguards for workers, which they say is happening at an increasing rate now, as profit takes precedence over people, and this under a Labour government. For more information, see www.hazardscampaign.org.uk.
OK, we're going to have our beautiful live act, which has come into the studio. We have a wonderful cellist called Fran. We have a very nice-looking gentleman with a guitar who's got a kind of black hat on.
And we also have Tomoko, who is going to be shaking away, but she's engrossed with her beautiful child at the moment. She's working out how to get her out of the door. And so hopefully they're going to be quite ready soon. We're just pausing for them. It's like a little circus upstairs in Resonance. I'm going to move the mic now. To Edo, victory as Edo injunction trial misfires. Another blow struck for free speech in Sussex. The nasty little stitch-up between Sussex police, arms dealers Edo MBM and protest-bashing lawyer Timothy Lawson Crutchenden. I'll repeat that. You might want to remember his name. Timothy Lawson Crutchenden, to crush dissent, has started to unravel. EDO, MBM, who manufacture parts for the Paveway bomb system and are involved in the manufacture of unmanned combat air vehicles, much loved by the US and Israeli militaries for targeted assassinations, are now ducking for cover as the legal bombshells go off in their own faces. Back in March 2005, the arms dealers were urged on by Kerry Cox of Sussex Police to apply for an injunction under the Protection from Harassment Act. This would have limited the regular pickets of the factory to 10 silent protests on a Thursday afternoon. No doubt they were assured by Britain's leading expert, Timothy Lawson Crutchenden, TLC, certainly not tender-loving care, that this would soon put paid to the pesky protesters. The injunction, by its definition of protester, initially applied to everyone on the planet, although the judge refused to impose limits on numbers. The injunction granted confined protesters to a narrow grass verge opposite the factory. It also prevented them from filming. This was vigorously enforced by a combination of private security and heavy policing. Private security goons abused their immunity from video in a series of provocative actions, and over 30 arrests have been made at the factory since court proceedings began last March. And two protesters were remanded in Her Majesty's Prison Lewis for alleged breaches of the injunction. Despite the prospect of hefty legal bills, the 14 individuals named on the injunction mounted a vigorous defence. In shades of the McLibel trial, the case has proved an embarrassing PR fiasco for the US-owned bomb manufacturers. A two-day hearing saw their fat being pulled out of the fire by the Attorney General as they were accused of war crimes. The MBM MD, David Jones, retired on the 31st of December. Crutchenden has repeatedly attempted to delay a full hearing of all the issues, perhaps because many of the allegations made against activists, such as the shining lasers into the eyes of employees, were so spurious that they would not stand up in court. We're going to be speaking on the telephone to Andrew Beckett, the press spokesman for the anti-EDO campaigners. Are you there? Are you there?
I haven't got a copy of Schnooze in front of me, so...
Okay, you ready?
So, Andrew, are you speaking from the Schnooze office?
I am indeed, yes.
Can you tell us briefly about Schnooze? And...
Oh, Schnooze is a weekly radical newsletter. It's been coming out now for 11 years. You should check it out on www.schnews.org.uk for regular updates on everything that's going on with direct action in Britain.
Great. And can you tell us why people in Brighton decided to focus on EDO?
Well, we felt it was about time that the anti-war movement needed a new focus. In the actual run-up to war, it was important to have large demonstrations in London and to take direct action at Fairford and so on and so forth. But realistically, we've got to understand that the war machine needs to come back to the factory floor, that the actual mechanics by which the aerial bombardment of Iraq was taking place, for example, are made in anonymous little industrial estates around the country. And Brighton was a very anti-war city. Over 6,000-7,000 people gathered in the town centre on the day that war broke out and invaded and took over the town hall, for example. So it was, and then afterwards we find out that this company, EDO MBM, was actually manufacturing the guidance systems for the Paveway bomb. Just a mile and a half out of the town centre. So it was decided to take them on and shut them down. It's an example of how a community, when it comes together and is empowered, can drive these warmongers out from our midst.
But are they not an important local employer? I mean, how did the people around about the factory feel about what you were doing?
They employ about 160 people. I mean, what you've got to understand is that within the arms industry, each job is subsidised to a tune of £14,000. That's actual active subsidy. That doesn't include the fact that they're effectively their only customers are governments. So we're not talking about real contribution to the local economy here. I mean, in a sense, the government money's coming into Sussex, but these aren't real jobs. And you've got to remember, there's a lot of highly skilled people at EDO who'd be much better off making equipment that wasn't used for this sort of these attacks on civilians. We just don't find the economic argument acceptable. It's not acceptable to do anything for money.
What kind of people are involved in the campaign?
There's all sorts of different people involved in the campaign, from Quakers to anarchists to a wide range of age groups. people who are into direct action, people from Respect Coalition. There's all a very large number of people involved.
Has it been supported by the official Stop the War Coalition?
No.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, as I understand it, I mean, the Stop the War Coalition went off on its own route. It was very unfortunate that the Stop the War Coalition manoeuvred itself into the position it did in running the anti-war movement in the country, because it was so focused. In order to I think, from their point of view, build what they consider to be a broad coalition, it negated any real radical politics around the war and satisfied itself with organising large marches in London. Now, I think the big march, the march of 1.5 to 2 million people, we can call it, was worth doing. But to continue to repeat that tactic, I was at a meeting recently where one of the heads of the Stop the War Coalition was saying, we've organised our 17th march in London and we'll organise another 17 more if that's what it takes. And obviously after 17 marches there's no effect whatsoever on British policy in either Iraq or Afghanistan. You've got to question that approach. It's time that the anti-war movement turned its hand to direct action and to actually physically obstructing the war machine.
Great. So what can you tell us, what's the latest developments in the campaign? We've just had a little update from Penny.
Absolutely. I mean, what happened is, obviously, when you're going to stand with a company that has its own MOD office, you're going to have when you try and shut down a company like that, you're going to have the campaign against you on behalf of the establishment. It's going to be highly politically motivated. And basically, Inspector Kerry Cox of Sussex Police recommended to Edo MBM that they take out an injunction similar to the injunctions taken out that have restricted the freedoms of animal rights protesters up and down the country and created exclusion zones. Sussex Police effectively tried to create an exclusion zone around the factory, which would have enabled them to arrest anybody who attempted to protest at the factory outside those 2 hours on a Thursday. This was challenged in the courts. The 14 people who were named on as defendants, who were prominent activists in the campaign, challenged this. And in shade of McLibel, they've actually cost Edo £200,000. The exclusion zone no longer applies as of the 13th of February. And in fact, we were up there yesterday, and The demos are so much more powerful and more effective because we were right up at the factory gates letting these people know. Because our main weapon really is the conscience of the people who work at Edo. We've talked to ex-employees and employees of Edo, and what they've said is most people don't think about what they do there. We're there to make sure they have to think about what they do at work every day. And now, having beaten this injunction was beaten with a combination of sort of grassroots legal action and also the fact that, despite the police intimidation, despite the fact there's been over 30 arrests and 2 people have gone to prison, we've maintained our weekly presence there, and more than weekly presence, and I think they know now we're not going to go away.
And I believe you have a big demo coming up on the 1st of March?
Absolutely. On the 1st of March, we are going to have a victory demonstration outside the factory. All restrictions have now been removed on protest outside the factory, so this is going to be a big one. So I suggest as many people as possible, people coming down from London would be great. So it's going to be at 4 till 6. Meeting at the bottom of Home Farm Road in Brighton. Don't worry, it'll be on our website, which is on www.smashedo.org.uk, and we encourage as many people as possible to come down and celebrate this, what is basically a major victory for civil rights and the peace movement.
It could be really good for people from London to come down and learn from what's happened in Brighton there, because I'm sure we have plenty of similar companies up here.
Absolutely. What would be best at the moment is if people can join us and we can shut this one down, we can then move on. I think the way that the animal rights movement has functioned, it's shown you that you can move from one target to another and you can affect it. But I think we're very different from the animal rights movement, because we're not under any illusion we're going to shut down the global arms trade this way. What we're doing is empowering ourselves, empowering a community to say that we don't have to tolerate the presence of these warmongers in our community.
Well done. Cheers.
Okay.
Thanks. Here's Penny. To celebrate the Edo victory, because we're very glad to hear that peace has won out, even in a little small way, we're going to have another song from our amazing band.
I am hungry, deep.
International news. Gentrification by greedy developers and local corrupt officials isn't just a problem in London boroughs like Hackney. This is a report about a mass eviction in São Paulo, Brazil. The largest squatted high-rise building in South America is called Prestes Maia and is currently under threat of eviction. It's housing 468 families, that is 1,600 previously homeless people, includes children, elderly and the disabled. And yet, the building will shortly be returned to its so-called lawful owner, a Mr. Hamuche and Co. In the last 15 years of ownership, the building is worth over £1 million, and this enormous debt... In the last 15 years of ownership, he hasn't paid any of his local taxes, which has amounted to a sum of over £1 million, and that is more than the building is worth. So this enormous debt, together with long years of abandonment, should obviously justify, even under law, a claim for the building to become the public property of the local municipality. Instead, it's going to be returned to its so-called owner, putting many hundreds of people back on the streets. The 468 families have lived in the 22-storey high-rise since 2002. It had previously been closed down for years and left in a deplorable condition, serving as shelter for only rats and cockroaches. There's a case of many buildings, unfortunately, in downtown São Paulo, a city surrounded by favelas where people incredibly poor are living in horrible conditions. So the new residents organise themselves to clean out tons and tons of rubbish and litter, 200 trucks full. They organise themselves in the building, expel drugs and any other criminal bosses who tried to take advantage of their situation. And they turned it into an exciting and lively human dwelling. The residents are now united in the downtown roofless movement, the Movimento Sem Tejo de Centro, or MST, of São Paulo. On January the 27th, the family's representatives met with the police authorities who are in charge of the forthcoming eviction. It was made clear that the action will take place sometime between today and the 21st of February. An exact date was not given for strategic reasons. It was also said that the troops will be prepared for the worst.
Police are advised to leave the precinct before the eviction to avoid unpleasant encounters. And when they asked where they were supposed to go, the answer was to the streets or elsewhere. This is the way the city government has acted during countless evictions since Mr. José Serra took office in 2005 as mayor of the largest Brazilian city. His project to gentrify the city centre, largely paid for by international funds, based on expelling the low-earning families and street dwellers using the municipal Guarda Civil Metropolitana and state Polícia Militar police forces, and unpunished police killings like that of Jean Charles de Menezes, are sadly not unusual in Brazil. The municipal and state authorities' attitude towards the poor and their movements is often first to criminalise them and then fight and persecute them without mercy, expelling them to the suburban favelas or at best to the social housing projects, mostly even further out from the city. On February the 17th, the residents of Preste's mayor's building blocked the street for almost 2 hours in an attempt to bring more attention to the situation of the residents and to the possible eviction. The Preste's mayor squat has a library, workshops, educational, social and cultural activities, and in recent year became a major laboratory for experiments in organising real human renewal of downtown Sao Paulo. People of all ages and upbringings, of all Brazilian states and other nationalities, artists and students work together to create a new understanding of how the city should work and can work. Putting all these people back onto the streets, pulverizing them, is a crime. Preste's mayor must stay. Squatter, social centres and Samba Solidarity Demo is on Thursday the 16th of Feb at 1pm outside the Brazilian Embassy, which is 32 Green Street, London. The organisers say bring drums, carnival costumes and cardboard boxes to erect a shanty sound. So that is Thursday the 16th of Feb, 1pm outside the Brazilian Embassy at 32 Green Street, London.
And back in London, we have another unreported police death. Unfortunately, the robbers who shot dead the WPC Barshevsky in Bradford last year allegedly have links to the Somali community in the Woolwich Plumstead area. As a result, local youths have accused the cops of being out for revenge and to be running a racist vendetta against them. On January the 10th, police raided a house in Plumstead looking for a suspect. Alone inside was Noor Saeed, who was unconnected to the accused, but was nevertheless later found outside the house seriously injured. It seems he fell headfirst from a second-story balcony. He died on January the 22nd from a massive brain injury. Now, this isn't the first such death in the region. Last year, in August, another young black man, Paul Coker, died on the floor of a cell in Plumstead Nick. The circumstances of his death are also unclear. His mother and sister were at a demo organised by the Somali friends and relatives of Noor Saeed, and the mother and sister of Paul Coker addressed the crowd of several hundred people. These relatives of the deceased are experiencing the same unaccountable wall of silence that the Domenez's family are so angry about with the killing of Charles. The family of Noor Saeed have all this to come. Right now, they are still coming to terms with the death of a loved one. His friends in the local community are furious, which is why several hundred people joined the demo over the course of the afternoon. Dozens more, who were not prepared to stand in a pen, hung out in the vicinity. The police, on this occasion, had clearly been told to keep on their best behaviour, and they kept their distance, politely negotiating with the organisers throughout. At one point, local youths blocked the road, which is one of the main routes into London. At this point, five van loads of TSG, Territorial Support Group, otherwise known as Goon Squad, cops showed up, and they were seen jogging into the back of the police station with their kit bags of riot gear. In the end, they weren't deployed as the demonstrators unblocked the road voluntarily as the demo drew to a close. Our reporter got talking to some of the demonstrators about the general situation. Many of them were on the Regent's Park demo the day before. They were angry and insulted by the Danish cartoons. However, they were equally unhappy that the media gave all the attention to a tiny group of extremists from Al-Mahajroun, while the death of people like Noor is ignored, which sends a clear signal that Muslim lives are just not deemed important in the country. So it's hardly surprising that these kids feel angry and alienated.
Okay, appearing on the SNews radar this week, this is from the SNews paper, was Project Censored, a US university media research group which tracks the news published in independent journals and newsletters and compares it to mainstream output. From this, they compile an annual list of 25 news stories of social significance that have been overlooked, underreported, or self-censored by the country's major national news media. What is perhaps not surprising, given the UK's slavish following of US trends, is that if we sample the top five, it sounds just like home. Number one, for Bush, Reid, Blair, administration moves to eliminate open government, terror laws, exemptions on freedom of information, anyone. Two, media coverage fails on Iraq, Fallujah and the civilian death toll. Three, another year of distorted election coverage. Four, surveillance society quietly moves in. 5. US and brackets by proxy UK uses tsunami to military advantage in Southeast Asia, positioning against the other seldom mentioned spectre, China. For the full rundown and articles, including some of the stories that have been self-censored, see projectcensored.org/censored_2006. I'm going to say that again. projectcensored.org/censored_2006.
And now for some positive news. A Devon couple who live in a Mongolian-style yurt have won their appeal to stay in their home. Marcus Tribe and Sarah Harvey have largely sustained themselves in their eco-friendly hut for the past 6 years. It's on a 7-acre site that they own at a place called No Man's Land near Tiverton in Devon. Last December, meddling Mid-Devon District Council ordered them to demolish the hut because it didn't meet planning regulations. But backed by the local community, Marcus and Sarah appealed and have now won the right to live as they choose. As Bob Charlton of the Parish Council said, perhaps they don't fit a household stereotype in the normal way, but their sustainable way of living is something that should be looked at much more closely. We should be learning from them, as opposed to telling them to go away.
Asda and Walmart has been found guilty of anti-trade union activity. Last year, Asda offered workers in Tynemouir a pay rise of 10% if they would give up their membership of the GMB union. While workers rejected this, Asda have been found guilty of trying to bribe their way to a union-free company. They have been directed to pay out a fixed sum of £2,500 to each of the 340 GMB members involved. That's a total of £850,000. Walmart is well known for its anti-union tactics elsewhere, especially in the US. Meanwhile, over in Ireland recently, union activists have been protesting against Dunnies, or as they have called the company, the Walmart of Ireland. Dunnies sacked a worker representative for, wait for it, wearing her union badge. But this has backfired as the news spread and an international email campaign began to target the company. For more on that campaign, see Indie Media Ireland at www.indiemedia.ie.
And back with dear old Asda. Here in London, Newham Council are trying to sell off a thriving 100-year-old market to developers St Modwin's, who will sublet the supermarket chain Asda. Local campaigners have called themselves Friends of Queen's Market, and they've been fighting the plans. They have a lot of local support because this market has 80 stalls and 60 shops, and it provides a lifeline to people on low income, selling fresh fruit and vegetables, oranges and lemons at 10 pence each instead of the supermarket's 25, and a head of garlic for 5p. Get down there. While concerned residents saw a full-page colour ad in the Estates Gazette in February 2003 offering the market site for sale as a development opportunity, that was when they started up the Friends of Queen's Market campaign group. The campaigners held 4 demonstrations at the town hall, with numbers ranging from 60 to 120. It has set up stalls in the market and collected 12,000 signatures for a petition against the sale of the market. Meanwhile, the East London community organisation, Telco, of local trade unions, churches, mosques, etc., held a month-long consultation with over 5,000 Newham people. Their findings were that a large majority of people did not want an Asda in their market. For more information, you can write to friendsofqueensmarket@yahoo.co.uk.
In Switzerland over the last 2 days, police have been on trial in connection with the Giet Evian summit in 2003. Back then, an affinity group of activists from the UK blockaded the Aubon Bridge in Switzerland in order to stop a G8 delegation from reaching their summit in Evian. The police cut the climbing rope that the activists were suspended from, nearly killing 2 people. The policeman who cut the rope and his senior officer have been in court in Nyon following appeal last May after the police originally had charges against them dropped in 2004. The officers are charged with causing severe bodily harm with negligence. Martin Shaw fell some 25 metres and his injuries include a broken back, broken pelvis and a shattered foot. Despite numerous operations, he will never make a complete recovery. The charges also include bodily harm against the second climber, Yazine Wenzel, who suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder for more than a year. The court case is the result of 3 years of public and legal pressure after the initial judge appointed to investigate the case showed clear bias in refusing to pursue the matter. In Switzerland, the police usually enjoy a relatively high degree of impunity and are protected from all manner of legal bureaucracy, despite many complaints against the police having been made. These are the first such charges to be brought to court in over 20 years. A verdict is expected tomorrow or Friday. While the activists hope they see justice this time, they say it's more important to keep highlighting such cases of abuse and repression in an effort to ensure similar abuses don't happen again in the future, with the trials of scores of police in Genoa accused of various crimes of brutality. Ongoing campaigners hope they can send a clear message that such abuses cannot be swept under the carpet. And with the next G8 due in Russia this year, they hope the authorities are listening. For more on the Auburn Bridge campaign, see www.auburnbridge.net. And there's a related event this Friday in London. Pig Brother, a group from Switzerland who monitor police abuses, are presenting a multimedia might be mouldy, but I think it's multimedia info night, documenting the weapons used by police and their effects and how many police fail to be held accounted for their actions. Alongside are speakers from the UK, including Ken Farrow and Brenda Weinberg from the film Injustice about deaths in police custody, Chris Alexander of the Azelle Rodney campaign, and the people from the Charles de Menendez campaign. And that's this Friday, the 17th, at the Rampart Social Centre at 7:30 p.m. For more, see www.rampart.co.nr. And we're going to have one more track, just a very quick track from our lovely band, and then we're going to play out the end of the show with a Bolivian benefit gig interview, which was recorded by Ramparts, which is about a Bolivian fundraising night and speaking to people there. So we're going to say goodbye. It's been lovely to talk to you. Keep posting your news. Bye.
Bye. Let me tell you the story of our story with Jack. When I'll divide in the sun of Iraq.
playing live anywhere?
The gallery on Friday. No.
Thursday.
So it's 23rd. We're playing at
the Bohemian
in Hackney.
Bohemian Place.
By Hackney Central. Possibly Friday at the gallery in Old Ford Road.
Okay, so if you want to hear more from this lovely band, get along to the gallery on Friday.
Glastonbury hasn't got in touch yet.
Okay, bye-bye everyone.
Following green on the next act, I've just been told, got some Bolivian food being brought to the front, okay?
My name is Mustafa Truss. I'm a member of Bolivia Solidarity Campaign. And Bolivia Solidarity Campaign been established a couple of years ago to support the miners' strikes and plus to support the Cochabamba strike for the nationalization of the water and gas. Our aim is basically to give our full support to social movement in Bolivia. And we know that there's a big element of it in the social movement, which is the indigenous people. And we are asking people to follow Latin America quite closely, because right now what's going on in Latin America is absolutely amazing. If you look at Africa, civil wars, if you look at the Middle East, which is Islamic movement, but only the radical movement is right now coming from the Latin America. Many people, they call what's going on in Bolivia right now the third revolution. The first revolution was against the Spanish imperialism at the time of the 1718. And then miners strikers in 1952, and now the third, you know, the cycle of the revolution. We are having it tonight, a solidarity night. The reason people are here basically to show their solidarity with, you know, the Bolivian people, at the same time to raise some money for delegates which is going to go to Bolivia on the 10th of April, and it's going to stay there for a week.
Okay, and who will be going, and what is it that they'll be able to achieve and bring back to the UK?
Roughly 10 people will gonna go to Bolivia. It might be a couple of more or less, but I'm sure at least it's going to be 10. Most of the people are a member of the trade unions, and what we are trying to achieve basically, we are trying to find some links between us, people in Britain and people in Bolivia, basically make the, you know, the British public aware what's going on in reality in Bolivia, what we are going through, and how we can, you know, find some links, some connection between us, and how we can join together to find a best way forward. That is the gonna be aim of the, you know, actually delegate. We are hoping to make this delegation regular, such as, you know, maybe six months, twice per year, such as like that, or bring them over here to get some, you know, first-hand news.
And if anyone happens to have won the lottery this week, how could they help to send these delegates?
We are paying only £760 for tickets from here to Bolivia, because there is no direct flight. So we need to go to first, you know, them, for instance, to France, and then from France to Caracas, and from Caracas we are going to fly to Bolivia. It is going to cost each of us £760. So we are paying that in our pocket, but obviously most of us there, we are working in public sector, we get quite low wage, so it is going to shake us in terms of the, you know, the financially to support ourselves. We are asking people to donate as much as they can, and this money is not going to go only to our, you know, the trip, also it's going to, you know, support, you know, the campaign in United Kingdom. Also, we fully support basically what's going on in Bolivia, but that doesn't mean, you know, there's a blank check for the, you know, the Evo Morales, because still many NGOs, many, you know, the independent campaigns, they have some doubts whether Evo Morales is going to achieve what he promised, and we are going to fully stand behind the public opinion that, you know, the gas, minerals and other things should be nationalized immediately. And it looks Evo Morales still, it is a bit, you know, far away what he promised.
The event that's happening here tonight, what kind of stuff's been going on, and how many people? Is it going well?
Well, roughly, as I can notice, roughly more than 150 people around, and might be more, but, you know, that's my first, you know, the guess. There are two or three different bands actually basically playing in here. We had a very nice, beautiful traditional dance and songs from Bolivia, from Bolivian people.
But the next action.
Let's give it a big large from the public sunset. They're really wicked. Let's do it for Jorge! Come on!
For the last hour, you've been listening to Indie Media. This is Resonance 104.4 FM. It's 2 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon.
Before we bring on the next act, I've just been told we've got some Bolivian food being brought to the front, okay?
My name is Mustafa Truz. I'm a member of Bolivia Solidarity Campaign. And Bolivia Solidarity Campaign been established a couple of years ago to support the miners' strikes and plus to support the Cochabamba strike for the nationalization of the water and gas. Our aim is basically to give our full support to social movement in Bolivia. And we know that there's a big element of it in the social movement, which is the indigenous people. And we are asking people to follow Latin America quite closely, because right now what's going on in Latin America is absolutely amazing. If you look at the Africa civil wars, if you look at the Middle East, it is Islamic movement, but only the radical movement is right now coming from the Latin America. Many people, they call what's going on in Bolivia right now the third revolution. The first revolution was against the Spanish imperialism at the time of the 1718, and then miners' strikers in 1952, and now the third, you know, the cycle of the revolution. We are having tonight a solidarity night. The reason people are here basically to show their solidarity with, you know, the Bolivian people, at the same time to raise some money for delegates, which is going to go to Bolivia on the 10th of April, and it's going to stay there for a week.
Okay, and who will be going, and what is it that they'll be able to achieve and bring back to the UK?
Roughly 10 people will going to go to Bolivia. It might be a couple of more or less, but I'm sure at least it's going to be 10. Most of the people are members of the trade unions, and what we are trying to achieve, basically, we are trying to find some links between us, people in Britain and people in Bolivia, basically make the, you know, the British public aware what's going on in reality in Bolivia, what we are going through, and how we can, you know, find some links, some connection between us, and how we can join together to find a best way forward. That is going to be the aim of the, you know, actually delegate. We are hoping to make this delegation regular, such as, you know, maybe six months, twice per year, such as like that, or bring them over here to get some, you know, first-hand news.
And if anyone happens to have won the lottery this week, how could they help to send these delegates?
We are paying only £760 for tickets from here to Bolivia, because there is no direct flight. So we need to go to first, you know, for instance, to France, and then from France to Caracas, and from Caracas we are going to fly to Bolivia. It is going to cost each of us £760. So we are paying that in our pocket, but obviously most of us there, we are working in public sector, we get quite low wage, so it is going to shake us in terms of the, you know, the financially to support ourselves. We are asking people to donate as much as they can, and this money is not going to go only to our, you know, the trip, also it's going to, you know, support, you know, the campaign in United Kingdom. Also, we fully support basically what's going on in Bolivia, but that doesn't mean, you know, there's a blank check for the, you know, the Evo Morales, because still many NGOs, many, you know, the independent campaigns, they have some doubts whether Evo Morales is going to achieve what he promised, and we are going to fully stand behind the public opinion that, you know, the gas, minerals and other things should be nationalized immediately. And it looks Evo Morales still, it is a bit, you know, far away what he promised.
The event that's happening here tonight, what kind of stuff's been going on, and how many people? Is it going well?
Well, roughly, as I can notice, roughly more than 150 people around, and might be more, but, you know, that's my first, you know, the guess. There are two or three different bands actually basically playing in here. We had a very nice, beautiful, traditional dance and songs from Bolivia, from Bolivian people.
But the next action!
Let's give it a big large from Zander, the proper sound set, the really wicked. Let's hear it for Jorge! Come on!
been watching upstairs some footage from Bolivia Indie Media, which I believe only started up 3 years ago or something. What kind of an impact has the presence of this independent media outlet made to getting information out of Bolivia?
Through the 2000 and 2005, a lot of things happened in Bolivia, and only maybe 5%, if I'm very optimistic, only 5% of the debt, you know, covered by the, you know, the big corporations such as BBC and CNN and Fox News. So many grassroots people, they don't rely anymore on the big corporations' news. They're relying on the small independent news organizations. Many people, they access the internet if they can, and then try to find, you know, the news from the independent, you know, the organizations or NGOs.
Would it be true to say that the people in Bolivia generally don't have access to the internet? So the people most likely to be looking at Bolivia Indie Media would be expatriate Bolivians working outside of Bolivia and finding out what's going on at home?
It is true, yes. Still, in Bolivia, many people cannot access the internet. That is true. But nevertheless, they don't rely on the, you know, the big corporations either. You know, they may watch the, you know, they may see CNN or, you know, BBC, but definitely they don't rely on it. And many people know that, you know, the main source of the news for big corporations goes from the, you know, the petite bourgeoisie, you know, the organizations or from the governments. So they don't rely on it because they know that what they have seen on the street, what they did on the street, but they show, they see absolutely something different on the, you know, the big corporations' news. And therefore, they don't rely on it. So I'm sure in future, NGO organizations or, you know, the independent media such as, you know, IndyMed, it's going to make a big difference.
Do you know anything about the project to take computers over to provide access?
Many NGOs, social movements and trade unions, they ask us to bring over to Bolivia second-hand computers, second-hand mobile phones, any second-hand digital cameras, because these things are quite expensive in Bolivia. And NGOs, social movement and trade unions, they cannot afford to pay a lot of money. So we are asking people to donate their second-hand laptops, if it's possible, because desktops are quite heavy to carry over there. Laptops, mobile phones, digital cameras, and so on.
And how can people find out more about it?
And you can reach the Bolivia Solidarity Campaign through the internet, which is www.boliviasc.org.uk. And if you would like to get into touch with Bolivia Solidarity Campaign, you should access the website.
That's wicked. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gents, we're going to play an instrumental from La Paz. La Paz is the coldest side of the country, and it's very romantic.